SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Hello, and thank you for downloading this new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, or if you're listening to Middle Earth Network Radio, thank you for listening live to our show. This podcast, this series, is entirely dedicated to The Hobbit, the book by J.R.R. Tolkien, but of course also to the two movies that are currently in production in New Zealand. And joining me, as always, from L.A. is Dave Cale, the program director of Middle Earth Network Radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Father Roderick, and I dearly hope that this connection's better and you can actually hear me speaking.
Yes, it sounds loud and clear. We had some minor issues, technical issues, before we started recording, but this seems to work quite well. So, well, I think we should start right away with the news from New Zealand.
Get down.
Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So, Dave, what did you hear this week about filming in New Zealand?
Well, by far the most interesting story is a story about them filming in Marlborough. It says here in an article on stuff.co.nz in the entertainment section, a scene from the first of two Hobbit movies will be shot near Pelorus Bridge, 60 kilometers west of Blenheim, over 10 days in December. The Pelorus River will feature in a scene from The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey, showing barrels plunging down the river during a perilous journey undertaken by Bilbo and the dwarves. So we know where they're filming the river scene, finally.
Excellent. Would this be close to we've seen some photos of a bridge where they were and there were, I remember, some plastic barrel-like things that were thrown in. Would that be the same bridge, or is this another area? I know they've been scouting the country.
Man, that story was from so long ago, I can't remember where that was. That was like back early in the summer. I can't help but wonder if maybe that was sort of a test run where they were just testing the barrels and seeing how the filming worked and stuff before they chose their final location, because I don't recall hearing about Marlborough before. So
me neither.
I don't know if this is the same location or not.
But what I immediately did was I went to YouTube and see if there were any video clips from the stream or from the Pelorus stream or river, and this video is showing a lot of foliage and trees, and it looks beautiful, but it's a very small stream, so I guess that this must be at the beginning, perhaps, of the river.
Yeah.
But it looks beautiful, and let's see, here is the Pelorus Bridge waterfall. Let me see, this one only got 33 views. And this is a very undeep river, lots of pebbles in it. Beautiful, beautifully clear water. But it's a close-up, so you can't really tell how big the entire thing is. But there's a nice waterfall. So there are some if our listeners are interested in getting an impression of what this might look like in the movie, then I would say just do a search for Pelorus Bridge on YouTube, and you'll find some interesting material. Do we have any other details about the exact location of the bridge? Because there are a number of bridges. You'll actually also find a lot of YouTube videos about people jumping from bridges over the Pelorus River. This
wow.
Video says, "Mad guy in his undies jumps from Pelorus River Bridge in Marlborough." Let's take a look at this.
There you go.
He is standing in his underwear on top of a
jump,
bridge.
Jump! Jump!
And he's only going to jump after 2.5 minutes, so let's take a look at that. He might actually be in the training for The Hobbit, so 8 minutes till the jump. 5, 4, 3, 3, 2, 1, and he's still not jumping. He's just standing there.
Coward.
He is. Oh, there he goes. Oh my gosh. This, by the way, is a beautiful spot. The moment he jumps. The moment you jump, actually, the camera pans down from the guy in his underwear, which is not very interesting for our for our purposes. But and it shows you the environment of the river, and the river here is a lot deeper than what we saw in the previous YouTube clips. Mm-hmm. And there's nice, you know, kind of rocky sides and some foliage and some plants. I can totally see this area, or perhaps even this bridge. As the location of for the barrels, this looks pretty cool. Although the river is not streaming, it's not flowing very fast, and I guess that for the actual scene, you must have a river that has some speed.
Well, and toward the end of the barrel ride for Bobo and the dwarves, when they start approaching Lake Town, I think the river tends to broaden out and slow down a bit, and they, you know, kind of just float on in into the Lake Town harbor. So I think if the river is sort of pretty diverse, that's probably good, and I'm sure that they can. If they want particular effects, like they want the barrels to go fast or whatever, that they can probably edit on top of it.
Oh, sure, yes. Although I figure that if they've been trying out these plastic barrels, then that indicates that they're probably going to try to do this, you know, at least with live barrels. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, well, we've discussed this earlier, you know, they're not sitting on top of these barrels, right? It's just
they're all
inside.
Yeah, the dwarves themselves are inside. I think they should actually go ahead and put the actors in them and make them float down the
river. Oh, they'll surely appreciate that.
Yes. So one thing I was thinking about this bridge, I'm guessing the bridge itself isn't going to be in the shots, because that's a very modern-looking bridge.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least the one that's on YouTube. I'm trying to find the Pelorus River here on the map. On the New Zealand map in Google Earth, mm-hmm. and it's really on the northern side, as far as I can tell, from the southern island. It's kind of it's not far from the Tasman Bay. Let me see. And apparently it's a very scenic area, so very popular with tourists. And of course, this must be absolutely fantastic for, you know, local tourism. To know that are using their river for such an iconic scene.
There's stuff about that in the article. The mayor of Marlborough, let's see, where is his name? Alistair Soman, is just simply ecstatic. He is beside himself with excitement. He says, "It is fantastic news. Not only do we have the fabulous Marlborough sounds and world-class wines, but we are a location for The Hobbit." And he later goes on to talk about the fact that this was worth, just tons of money for Matamata. And so they're really all excited that this is going to boost local tourism for Marlborough.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think I found the spot where this will be filmed. I typed in Google Earth, I typed in Pelorus and Marlborough, and it zoomed me straight to, it brought me straight to the Pelorus Bridge. Mm-hmm. And the river here is quite wide. It's, let's see, the bridge itself. So it's about like, at least 4 or 5 cars wide. So it's not a really, really wide river, but it's surrounded by trees. This whole area surrounding the bridge is kind of foresty. And there are also some beautiful patches with gray rock. So that could be, I don't know, the place where they kind of... perhaps walk up to the shore or something like that, or the sides of the river. As usual in Google Earth, you also have a lot of photos on there from this. Oh yes, this could totally work for The Hobbit. Just use, if you have Google Earth, just type in Pelorus and Marlborough, and that will get you to the Pelorus Bridge, and you'll see for yourself. This could totally work. As a benefit actually for the production is that since there's this bridge and this road, it's actually quite easy to get there. And even though if you're standing near the river, the only thing you see are trees and forests around you. That's actually north of the bridge. It's all just fields with grass, and so it's very easy to set up camp there. So I think that there is a great combination here of a very scenic area, and at the same time, it's very easy to get there with a lot of people, which is also probably something that they take into account when they scout for places.
So another interesting thing, tidbit here, is reading in this article, it sounds like there were at least some scenes from the film of The Sound of Music that were filmed here. Because they're mentioning in the article, when they're talking about long-term tourism opportunities, they mention tours of the Sound of Music settings are still popular 46 years later. But maybe they're just randomly bringing that in. I'm not sure if they're actually saying that they do have those tours there, if they were just off the cuff saying that's an example. But maybe let's see if we can figure out.
I think... What they?
No, never mind. It's not actually in New Zealand. They were just tossing that out there for no reason.
I think what they mean is that this could be a long-lasting tourist
yes,
reason
like
for
that.
Tourists to visit the Marlborough area.
Yes,
and
so
I think
I
they're
misspoke.
Right.
I will correct myself. They were just using that as an example. The tours of the Sound of Music settings in Europe continue to be popular, and therefore they hope these will be popular 50 years later too. Sure,
well,
why not?
Absolutely. I think that the entire country will probably benefit for years to come from the exposure that they had thanks to The Hobbit.
I think they should just rename it to Middle Earth.
I think so too. That would actually be a great idea. Just Middle Earth. Instead of Kiwis, just call them Hobbits. Send all your hate mail to noreply@sqpn.com. Wow. So that is great, actually, to get a glimpse of another real-life location for this iconic scene. Wasn't this also the illustration that was featured on the cover of one of the Hobbit, or at least it was one of the scenes that Tolkien himself illustrated, right? I remember seeing that picture. Because Tolkien, did he do his own illustrations in a book? I think he did.
He did, I think, especially in the early editions. Because he was a prolific artist. I actually, for my birthday, my girlfriend Teresa got me a very rare collector's item book collection of Tolkien's artwork.
Oh wow!
And he's quite a prolific artist. He's he's an excellent amateur artist and painter, and they used a lot of it in the early editions of The Hobbit, I think.
Here you go. I've actually found the picture that I was referring to. And it's not really on the cover of The Hobbit. But
drop it into the Skype.
It's this nice scene. Well, let's see if I can do that. It's a tiny... I have never tried that out. I'm dropping it into the Skype window right now. Is it transferring?
Oh. I don't know. I was going to say the link, but...
Oh, the link. Okay. I was like, well, perhaps I can just send you the picture. Who knows? But that apparently doesn't work. But let me find the link. It's just a little thumbnail. I do remember this. I think when I was a kid, I had a picture actually, or a book of the Hobbit that was illustrated with the original illustrations that had the original illustrations, and I do remember this picture. It's kind of the arrival, I think, at the lake.
Yes,
and you can tell that
it's Marlborough.
Well, almost. It could definitely be Marlborough. And it's surrounded by trees. So at least in Tolkien's imagination, I think that that Marlborough would be pretty close to what he envisioned. Although there are no mountains, I think, around Marlborough, as far as I can tell.
We don't know if he ever went to New Zealand, do we?
I don't think so.
I'm sure it's too much of a stretch to imagine that maybe he went to New Zealand and could possibly have been inspired. But if that were true, that would be fascinating. Life imitates art, imitates life.
I'm
sort of
pretty
situation.
Sure that that is not the case. I mean,
no.
if you look at the prices now and the airfare to go to New Zealand in this day and age, and then, you know, imagine that in his time, no, I don't think he ever went to there. But I always figured that he modeled at least part of the landscape mentioned and described in The Hobbit on you know, his own country, on the UK. And then perhaps, I don't know, on what he knew from Nordic countries and Europe. And it's a mishmash of all sorts of different types of landscape.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move to the next story. One final question. When is this filming going to take place?
In mid-December, although they mentioned in the article that they're actually on site in Marlborough right now, I believe, that there's activity happening like over the next few days. But I think they were saying like the first half of December.
Wow. Interesting. So is still part of the second phase of filming, or would that be the third phase? I don't know. Because they've been filming for a long time now already in the second phase. So it's yeah. Of course not necessarily this. Peter Jackson is not necessarily involved in this shooting. If it's just the barrels, then this could be second unit shooting, or even just a special
maybe
effects crew.
Maybe it's Andy Serkis.
Yeah, it could very well be. Who knows?
So they're on. It says major prep will begin October 31st. Filming will take place between December 6th and 16th, but there's actually activity on location from 3'7" today.
So, wow.
Or, well, today when this was posted. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I guess that
today
was
today. Today in our time, yes. Hey, I actually Googled, did J.R.R. Tolkien ever reside in or visit New Zealand? Uh-huh. According to this website, which is just one of those wiki answers websites. No, Tolkien did not go to New Zealand. He did live in South Africa for a very short period of time when he was very young, but he remembered very little about his time there. So, yeah, no New Zealand.
There we go.
Exciting news this past week, and I think I even Twittered about this on our Twitter feed. And by the way, for our listeners that might not be aware of the fact that we are Twittering about The Hobbit as well. I recently changed the name of our Twitter feed. It used to be SQPN Hobbit, and I changed it into Hobbit Podcast because of I realized that if people find us through a retweet, for instance, and it just says SQPN Tolkien, it's not very, you know, it doesn't communicate that we actually have a podcast. And so I kind of made it a little bit more obvious. It's like Hobbit Podcast. And if people see that, hopefully they'll subscribe to our Twitter feed and we'll find the address to our podcast feed. But I think I posted the other day a link to an article that talked about a possible Hobbit tie-in with the Hobbit movies, and that there is actually, as we speculated the other day, a video game that is in preparation now, and that will going to launch probably before even the premiere of The Hobbit itself. That's usually mm-hmm. what happens. I remember that happened with the Lord of the Rings video games. They usually hit the market like a month or even before that, before the actual premiere of the movie. So do we know mm-hmm. anything about this movie? About the game? Is this Electronic
Nothing
Arts?
Nothing other than the fact that it's happening. And the blurb that I heard about it was buried in an article about the Batman 2 Lego video game. So they basically just slipped it in. They're like, they did an interview with somebody from Warner Games, and they were talking about sort of their plans for the next few years. And they were mostly focusing on the next Lego Batman game and some of the other superhero games. And they're like, oh, yeah, and also, you know, we're working on a Hobbit game. And that was it.
Interesting.
And, of course, you know, I'm reading this thinking, come on, reporter, like, press, get more details.
Yes. That's actually, that would be huge news.
Care way more about that than Lego Batman.
On the official Wikipedia page for the Hobbit movie, there is a little blurb, but it's very vague and extremely concise about the games. It says, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment now has the rights to develop a video game based on The Hobbit, following, interesting, the expiration in 2008 of Electronic Arts' license to The Lord of the Rings. So Electronic Arts was the publisher of the Lord of the Rings action games. And I played a couple of them. I think I played the Two Towers one, which was pretty good. It was very close to, at least in visually and with the music, very close to the movies. But I didn't know that their license expired in 2008. Then this article also says, however, when Guillermo del Toro was set to direct, he had stated that a video game, if it was to be made, would not be released to tie in with the Hobbit film, but rather after their release. Del Toro had stated that while he would like to be involved in the creation of the video game, making it at the same time as the film would complicate things due to a tight schedule. In October 2011, so this is new, Warner Brothers confirmed that the Hobbit video game would be released in 2012 before the release of the first film. However, the studio did not confirm whether or not the game would be a tie-in with the film. Well, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. Of course it's going to be a tie-in with the film.
There's this huge movie coming out, but you know what? Let's not bother.
Yeah, it's about a totally different Hobbit, and he lives on another planet, and he's green, and he is actually finding recipes for second breakfast. No, of course it's going to be about the movie. So, but I think that this article or this blurb on the Wikipedia page refers to the same article that you've read about the Lego Batman 2, DC comic games, etc. in 2012. But interesting, Warner Brothers, I don't know if they've done anything yet with the Hobbit franchise, or I don't think so. Are they also involved in the War of the North video game that's coming
out? They certainly are.
Oh, wow.
Yes, which interesting that you mentioned that because we're actually Middle Earth Network is going to be doing. I'm unfortunately can't confirm the date and time yet, but sometime in the next week we're doing an on-air interview with game designer from Warner Brothers Interactive. Or I guess actually from Snowblind, who's the developer. We're doing an on-air interview with somebody from the War in the North team.
Nice.
To learn more about the game, and then. And then next week, I'm actually going to go visit Warner Brothers Interactive and see a demo of the game and meet some people there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's exciting. And rest assured, Father, when I go next week for the demo, I'm going to be looking for any trace or hint of Hobbit games that
Absolutely.
I can find.
Yeah. Let us know whatever you can find out. That would be great. And it's... What was I going to say? It's not the first video game that is based on The Hobbit. I remember that there was a PC game made a long time ago that also featured the story of The Hobbit, but that was even before the Lord of the Rings movies.
This is the tale of Bilbo Baggins.
This is the...
A hobbit with no idea of the
trailer.
Adventures about to befall him.
It likes riddles, does it?
And I say we squash the dwarves and boil them!
This is the orcs.
Red has come upon you all! The goblins of the north are coming!
I will show you who is the true king under this mountain.
And that's Smaug. That's a dragon.
The Hobbit.
This game...
This game has been rated E for everyone.
That's what I was about to say. No, that's not what I was about to say. This game came out, I think, before or around the first Lord of the Rings movies. I think it was in 2006. And... this is the first time that I saw a trailer for it. I've seen it in, you know, for a discount in a lot of stores, and I never bought it because I figured, you know, it's so old, it's not going to be any good. But now that I see this, it's pretty impressive. Visually reminds me a lot of the Zelda games, at least the Zelda games that came out for the Nintendo Wii. So it has kind of a cartoony style. You can tell that it was made for not so powerful systems, but I do like the voice acting in there. And Smaug actually, I was like, wow, that could be, well, who knows? It might have been part of the inspiration for the way that we will see Smaug in these movies. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to find this on Steam and see if it's available online. And this might be interesting, actually, to review on one of our shows in the future. Of course, it's I'm pretty sure that the game that's coming out in 2012 will be a lot more realistic and will be very close to the movie. But I'm still curious to see how they turned this, you know, this story into a game before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that one came out in 2003. I just looked it up.
Oh, wow, that's really old.
So that was actually right around the time that the first Lord of the Rings movie came out.
Yeah, that's probably also the reason that they wanted to get this movie out, because they didn't have the rights.
Unfortunately, I was looking at reviews on GameSpot and a few other places, and it doesn't have particularly good reviews. But we'll postpone our judgment. There's a computer game from 1982 called The Hobbit as well.
Really? Wow, yeah. That's even older. Is that an adventure game or?
Yeah, it's like one of those sort of text adventure games like Zork or something.
Oh, if it's a text adventure, I'll play it. I love text adventures because at least you can, you know, create your own imaginary Middle Earth, and that always beats anything you can do on a computer. I googled the 1982 Hobbit movie here on YouTube, but I don't see any YouTube trailers.
I dropped a link to a Wikipedia article about it into the Skype chat for you.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, there it is. I remember this game. I had it on the ZX Spectrum. Actually, yeah. I played this game. I'm not kidding you. It looks awful. It has it shows the Hobbit hole, the Bilbo's house, and it has like this purple carpet and this bright green ugly door, and the rest is just wireframe graphics. And the ZX Spectrum was my second computer that I ever owned. We started here with the ZX81, which was very popular in Europe. I think it came out in the United States under another name, but I forgot what it was. They changed the brand. Sinclair was this very talented British millionaire inventor guy, and one of his missions was to make the home computer affordable for people. And so the Spectrum was kind of the follow up to the ZX81, and it was able to display colors, but in a very limited way. And I do remember playing this game. It was, you know, one of these games you bought it on a tape cassette. And it actually, in order to load the game, you had to put the cassette in a cassette recorder and press play. And then it would just for 20 minutes, you would hear all this bleep and bloops and all this noise, which is just all the bits that were downloaded into the computer. And it was kind of a text adventure with a few graphics. So every once in a while, it would show you a new picture. And I remember I was a big fan of The Hobbit at the time. I'd just read it, in book form. And I was super excited that this came out for the ZX Spectrum. And I don't think I ever finished the game because it was really difficult. And, you know, with these text adventures, if you didn't really phrase it well, it would not understand what you wanted to do. So if you would say, like, hit orc, it would say, I do not understand what you're saying. And it's smash orc, I do not understand what you say. And then the actual command had to be hit orc with sword in from pocket or something like that. So it was very finicky.
I remember those games. I remember playing Zork, and somehow when I was standing like on a mountain or a cliff or something, and if I just happened to type any variation of jump off cliff, it always knew what I meant then. You know what I mean? You're just pulling around, you're like, jump off cliff. Oh, you're dead now. What?
Yes. Those were the days. I love those games. But now I want to go and look for an emulator or something to play this. Because, of course, the original Spectrum, you cannot buy that anymore. You can find it perhaps in some museums. But I know that on the iPad, for instance, there are emulators for the ZX Spectrum. And I just wonder if
I can confirm that there are emulators for the Spectrum and the Commodore 64, which I believe was the U.S. version. And I found a site where they actually you can download ROM files of the game and stuff. So,
well,
I would encourage anyone to pirate anything ever anywhere.
Well, but with these very old games, sometimes the copyright has expired, or, well, you know, sometimes they are yeah. available for just a few bucks. I know that, well, I'm looking in the iTunes store and see if one of those iPad emulators has the Hobbit game, but I can't find it yet. Probably not likely, because the Hobbit, of course, is still a trademark. And so even if you would re-release a game like that, you'd probably get a note from... the Tolkien estate lawyers or something like that.
That's true.
Just look around a bit on the web if you're interested. You might actually find it. I'm getting all nostalgic. So this is the third game that is based on The Hobbit, as far as we know. So I'm curious to hear from our listeners if they have memories of either the first or the second Hobbit game. And if you want to send us a review, please do so. You can send us an MP3 file at tolkien@sqpn.com. That's our email address, so tolkien@sqpn.com. Or you can call the listener feedback line, which is a generic feedback line that I use for a lot of my podcasts. But if you talk about The Hobbit, then I know what show you're referring to. And the number is +1 206 202 4455. So that's +1 206 202 4455. Let's take a break.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
This podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Bluehost. Bluehost is a great hosting service for your website or blog. And not only do they offer you space for your blog, but they actually have this one-click installation. So if you want to run a WordPress blog and you have no idea how to make that happen, and you don't want to go with the free services that are always very limited in what you can do in terms of the visual aspect of it and the domain name, that you can just click on a button and it will install a fully functional WordPress blog, and even updates are very, very easy to install. And the best thing of Bluehost is the price. It's just $6.95 per month, and you get your own website, your own blog, unlimited data transfer and unlimited storage space. And included in the price is a full-fledged .com domain name. So you can have, you know, my favorite TolkienGame.com and have a great-looking professional WordPress blog for just $6.95 per month. And imagine what you can do if you post, like, advertisements, if you use affiliate links and your website starts to become popular, you can actually make that money back quite easily. So if you want to sign up or you want to have more information, just go to our website at thehobbit.sqpn.com, click on the Bluehost banner, or just go to our main website, sqpn.com. There's a Bluehost banner there on the top, and it will give you all the information you need. I use it myself. I love Bluehost and highly recommend it. Back to the news. What else happened in the world of Tolkien? We've talked about the filming in Marlborough. We've talked about the video game.
Well, one interesting thing that a lot of our fans might be aware of is next year, next fall, is the 75th anniversary of the publication of The Hobbit, which wow. is really, really exciting.
Yes.
Of course. It was published, interestingly, it was published in September 1937. Interesting that it was published in September, which happens to be Bilbo Baggins' birth month, so that's cool. So there's going to be all kinds of celebrations next year. I mean, obviously, there's probably no coincidence that the movie's coming out then. Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor's book on The Hobbit, is going to come out then, and the publishers HarperCollins, Houghton Mifflin, all these guys are going to do all kinds of celebrations. And it looks like HarperCollins is getting an early start on that. I think HarperCollins is I'm trying to keep straight who publishes where. I believe HarperCollins is the UK publisher. Mm-hmm. And Houghton Mifflin is the US publisher, because I know Houghton Mifflin is the one that the Tolkien professor is working with.
Really?
So anyway, the HarperCollins people say they're going to get out in front of the Hobbit mania that's going to start next fall, and they're going to start publishing some books and stuff early in 2012. Actually, I think they're already publishing stuff right now. In particular, they mention a book called The Art of the Hobbit that compiles all of Tolkien's art, which I wonder if this is an updated version of the book that I just got.
Sounds like what you mentioned, yes.
Yes. And it looks like they say 27th October, so they must actually mean this month. So they're getting way out in front of
me. Yeah, I'm looking at it on Amazon, and it's called The Art of the Hobbit Special Edition Hardcover. Let's see. Does it have a description? Not really. There it is. Product description. To celebrate the 75th anniversary of the publication of The Hobbit, a sumptuous full-color art book containing the complete collection of more than 100 Hobbit sketches, drawings, paintings, and maps by J.R.R. Tolkien. When Tolkien wrote The Hobbit, he was already an accomplished amateur artist and drew illustrations for his book while it was still in manuscript. The Hobbit at first printed had 10 black and white pictures, 2 maps, and binding and dust jacket designs by its author. Later, Tolkien also painted 5 scenes of 4 color plates, which are some of his best work. His illustrations for The Hobbit add an extra dimension to that remarkable book and have long influenced how readers imagine Bilbo Baggins and his world. And I'm pretty sure that they will also influence the way that the Bilbo Baggins world looks in the movies. To celebrate this anniversary, the complete artwork created by the author for his story has been collected in The Art of the Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, including related pictures, more than 100 sketches, drawings, paintings, maps, and plans are presented here, preliminary and alternate versions, and experimental designs, as well as finished art. Some of these images are now published for the first time, and others for the first time in color. Fresh digital scans from the Bodleian libraries in Oxford and Marquette University in Wisconsin allow Tolkien's Hobbit pictures to be seen more vividly than ever before. That sounds like a must-have for a Tolkien fan.
Sure does. Another thing that they're releasing is a something called The Pocket Hobbit, a small format edition, of The Hobbit, mm-hmm. featuring one of Tolkien's illustrations on the cover. So that sounds really fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely going to be a great time for any Tolkien-related publisher. In the next few years, is everybody's going to buy that stuff again. And so, yeah, if you want to write a book, do it now. You can make a lot of money. Just be careful with the rights and, you know, it's kind of, you always have to be careful with these franchises because there is a lot of money involved. So, let's see. By the way, if people are interested in the Art of the Hobbit, I'll include a link in the show notes to the Amazon entry. This is another way in which you can support our show is by if you ever purchase something at Amazon, you can go to our website and click on the Amazon link. Or I would highly recommend you do that because then Amazon, instead of keeping all the profit for themselves, they'll give a little bit back to us. And so that will help us finance our bandwidth and website and everything. So just, again, go to thehobbit.sqpn.com and click on the Amazon link before ordering. Let's see. What else is going on around The Hobbit? Oh, lots of stuff. I'm not even sure that we can get to the end of this of this list. What about these Icelandic horses to play in The Hobbit?
Yeah, that's just a fun little story on it from IcelandReview.com, and they're basically saying that Icelandic horses will be playing a role in The Hobbit. It looks like these Icelandic horses look kind of like they're really small, or at least. Well, I guess they could be using the Hobbit vision camera angle here, and maybe they're actually huge and they just look small. But I think they're almost like ponies. They're kind of small in that they're but they're very strong and they have thick coats and they can carry heavy burdens. So it sounds to me like these might end up being the horses/ponies that the party is riding on. Yes. That's my speculation.
Yeah, I think so too. How cool. Do we have pictures somewhere, or do we just have to Google Icelandic horses?
There are pictures on the article, but they're, like I said, they're not particularly good pictures, so it might be worth Googling as well. Icelandic. Let's see if we get anything by doing this. Icelandic horse. Oh, there you go. It's got a Wikipedia page.
Oh, cool.
So, they're actually not small, because that that's a full-sized person riding on it. They're not. I don't think they're quite as big as usual horses. Actually, you know what I think it is? I think that they proportionally, like, if you put normal-sized people on them, they look about like sort of – it's what a dwarf would look like riding on a pony.
Right.
So I don't, they're not overly small, but they're proportionally – they look like overly large ponies. So that's sort of my impression looking at them.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's just a fun little tidbit.
They look really nice. But it's – yeah. Again, I'm just excited that we get live horses instead of CGI ones. Nothing beats reality, I think, with this movie.
Yes. Thank God George Lucas isn't in charge of it.
Did you have to say the G word? In other news, remember that we talked about our friends of Road to the Shire? These three guys that are doing anything they can come up with to be part of the Hobbit movies. And they actually went to New York City, I think. Was this in New York? And they tried to be on the Colbert Report show. And so they've been LARPing at before the show. And I didn't even know what LARPing was. I had to look it up. But it is – now I forgot, of course, what it was, LARPing. I'm not enough of a geek, but let me see. It's actually live action role playing. So they dressed up as hobbits, and they sent me via Twitter. They sent us the photos, as well as another video on YouTube. That is because of course they try to enlist Colbert
on October 5th
in their quest to be on the Hobbit.
Hobbit fans set out to recruit the wisest of all Lord of the Rings faithful. The number one fan, Stephen Colbert, to help three hobbits get back to the Shire. Lost in the West, these hobbit wannabes journeyed eastward to the Large Apple, where Stephen the Wise resides. In order to win his attention, these hobbits staged a 60-second live-action flash battle in front of Colbert Studios. Dressed in full hobbiton regalia, these Middle-earth maniacs waged an epic battle of red versus blue. Boehner versus Barney style. Or in other words, a slow-motion 60-second carp, Congress acting like ridiculous politicians. Now, the three hobbits anxiously await the reply from Master Stephen Colbert. Stephen, you helped the Ice Kings. Will you now sponsor hobbits and help them get back to the Shire? Lend us your powers. Come to their aid. Only you can help them now.
A very funny video, and that's very smart to try to get noticed by Stephen Colbert, because we know that he is a huge Tolkien fan. And so I guess that not only the Tolkien professor is now courting Stephen Colbert, but he's joined by the Road to the Shire hobbits. I love it. I love it.
Pretty soon, Stephen Colbert will be the center of the Tolkien universe.
There you go. There you go. Actually, they should put Stephen Colbert in The Hobbit as an extra.
I completely agree. I think he should be Bard the Bowman.
Yes, why not? And it's fun to see this video. I only played 1 minute of it. But the guys from Road to the Shire made their own costumes, and including pointy ears, which brings me to the next topic of our conversation. It's very soon in the United States going to be a feast day that is celebrated and enjoyed by many kids, which of course is Halloween. It's not as big over here in Europe as it is in the United States, but it is a perfect excuse for fans of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings to dress up as one of their favorite characters. And I think that there are actually even contests being organized to for the best, the best looking hobbit slash elf slash dwarf slash Uruk-hai. Dare I say so? And didn't the Mythgard Institute launch an initiative about this?
Yep, there's actually two contests, believe it or not, happening
really?
Right now. Those two contests might actually merge. But Middle Earth Network is doing a costume contest, and we'll tweet about it, and we'll post it in the show notes maybe. Middle Earth Network's doing one that started a couple days ago and runs through Halloween. And basically, you can go to the the submit photos on the Middle Earth Network social network. There's a costume contest group. Basically, just send your name, title of your costume, what it represents, how you created it, and then a photo. And it has to be inspired by Tolkien. And then the winner will get some, excellent prizes. And then the Mythgard Institute is actually doing a similar contest that runs through November 5th. And they are having people submit through the Facebook wall. And their prize, of course, is free tuition to audit any class. Ooh, which is a really, really good prize.
That is a great prize. Now I'm considering participating.
Yes. What are you planning to dress up?
I'm not saying anything now. I've already said too much. The best source, of course, for inspiration and know-how about how to go about creating a good-looking Lord of the Rings / Hobbit costume is, again, YouTube. And you will find lots of tutorials that will tell you how to, put up makeup and look like an elf. And there's even a Halloween tutorial here to create pointy ears the cheap way. I gotta play this. I'm Dutch, so I love cheap ways to create pointy ears.
Hi, guys. It's been a while. It's Halloween soon, and I thought it would be nice to upload something for once. I'm going to show you how to get pointy ears without using any extensions or something.
Looks actually pretty realistic. It's scary.
No. Well, it's actually quite simple. The only thing you need is ears, tape, a scissor, and if you've got long hair, it's good to have a hair clip thing, so you don't get sticky.
Okay, I think that this video actually supposes that you already have the ears. I suppose that you can get those online. What I would like to know is how to make your own ears, just from scratch. But this video shows how to attach them. And if you click on one of those videos or just Google for it, pointy ears or a hobbit or elf ears, you'll find lots and lots of tips on how to make them look very realistic. And here's a one that actually shows you how to use liquid latex to make elf ears.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And it's like a fast, like a super fast video where they speed up the process. And it shows you someone using actually clay, I think. It's got some weird sound effects. So first you make a mold, and then probably you pour in like latex and everything. But I guess that most of us, well, I'm saying us, but I'm not sure if I'm part of the us, but we'll just look online for an address to get pointy ears and then just look up how to attach them to your own ears. And the cool thing about pointy ears is you can use them to look like a hobbit or an elf during Halloween, but if you want to stand in line to see the premiere of whatever future Star Trek movie, you can always use them to look like Spock or a Vulcan. So there are many ways in which you can use these same pointy ears. So I would definitely try to get some, and you never know, they might come in handy in more ways than you think. Now, do you have any pointy ears at home, Dave?
I don't. I have to admit, I'm a lackluster fan. I don't usually dress up as characters from things I like.
Your approach is more the intellectual approach, right?
That's correct.
You have
lots
of opinions about pointy ears, and you probably can tell us all about the history of pointy ears in philosophy and theology and literature. Yeah,
that's right.
No need to wear them, actually, to appreciate them.
Yes.
I'd love to see some of those pictures in these contests. I'm going to think about this whole dressing up thing for Halloween. As I said, we don't really celebrate Halloween here in Europe. We do have the Feast of All Saints and then, of course, All Souls the next day on November the 2nd. No Halloween, unfortunately.
Somebody was telling me that the other day, that you guys don't really celebrate Halloween in Europe, which seems bizarre, of course, to me, coming from America.
Well, the whole tradition of Halloween isn't that old, and it originally stems from All Saints. Basically, it's All Hallows' Eve, and Hallow is an old word for saint. And so it was the eve of All Saints' Day. And I guess it's a very American tradition, just like the way that Christmas and Father Christmas it has a very specific American style to it because of the Coca-Cola advertisements. Yes. They kind of came up with this idea of turning Saint Nicholas, who was also popular here in Europe, but to dress him up in, you know, a red suit and make him actually obese and giving him a big wide beard. That was all Coca-Cola, and it just entered, you know, the American mythology. And right. And the interesting thing is that it's only now through this, you know, connection that we all watch the same media and we're all connected to the internet, that slowly those American things are seeping into our European culture. I've not seen much of the inverse process taking place, much to the chagrin of us Europeans. We'd definitely like to enrich your culture with some of our European stuff. But
please do. We need it. It's sad how much of our sort of modern traditions and mythologies can be traced back to commercial interests.
You know,
like the fact that Halloween is celebrated the way it is and as big as it is, I'm sure dates back to somebody thinking they can make some money off of it. Same thing with Christmas. Same thing with the way we do Easter now.
Okay.
It's just depressing.
By the way, according to our chat room, this is actually an urban legend that Coca-Cola came up with, that image of Santa Claus. But where did they get it? There's on Snopes, there's a whole version. The modern version of Santa Claus, there's a whole story about it. The modern version of Santa Claus was not created by Coca-Cola. Sundblom's illustrations were based upon what had already become the standard image of Santa, as noted in a New York Times article published in 1927, 4 years before the appearance of Sundblom's first Santa-based Coca-Cola ad. Illustrations of lavishly bearded Santas and his predecessors showing figures clothed in red suits and hats with white fur trimming held together with broad black belts were common long before Coca-Cola's first Santa Claus advertisements appeared. And then they've got some proof. But Coca-Cola definitely contributed to the kind of the universality of this way of depicting Santa Claus. But we have our Saint Nicholas also has a white beard and red clothes. It's just liturgical garments instead of the Americanized version.
The fat suit.
Yeah, the fat suit. The one thing that I wanted to say is that, of course, The Hobbit and the world of Tolkien itself is a great vehicle of European culture to other countries. It's a great way to export a lot of, at least of the mythology that developed in the Nordic countries of Europe. And it's becoming part of much loved lore in the US, in America, but also in New Zealand, Australia, and all across the world. And so it's interesting how that works, that sometimes a story can be a vehicle for a lot of values. And it's not just the story, it's also the values that are part of the Tolkien's world that are spreading through the stories and through the fact that these movies actually help these stories to become universal stories. And I'm not so sure actually about areas like, I don't know, Russia or India or Japan and China. Do we know anything about the popularity of Tolkien in those areas?
Well, I do know for a fact that there's a small but very active contingent of East Asian Tolkien fans in the My Middle Earth social network. So, but I have no idea what the mass appeal is. I don't know if there's going to be millions of people out in full force to watch the movie, or if there's people over in China recreating battles from the movies in full costume and LARPing. I don't know.
Probably not. But hey, if you are from India or from China, and you can help us understand how the reception is of these stories and whether there are perhaps even modified versions of the story, because that happens too, that sometimes they will take a story and they will just, you know, do a remake. But America, the U.S. does it all the time. They take stories, and then the European version is not good enough, so they'll just do another version. Like proof of this is the Dragon Tattoo, you know, the Stieg Larsson novels. They've already they've already been turned into movies in Europe, but now they're doing an American version of those movies because, you know, you guys don't like you don't like to read subtitles.
Yes.
Well, and with that, we've come to another to the end of another episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. I want to mention again our sister podcast called You Have a Sister. It's called Secrets of Middle Earth, where we travel Middle Earth virtually in the game Lord of the Rings Online, and we have just entered the Mines of Moria, which was a long time wish that I had it. You know, I wanted to enter the Mines of Moria for a long time, and so we're finally there. And I always thought that the Mines of Moria were more or less completely invented by the game makers, by Turbine. Turns out that there are actually quite a few locations in the game that are, well, part of the Tolkien, of the Lord of the Rings story. And so we'll try to find them inside the Mines of Moria. And there's actually also great background information about the history of these mines. And so we always use a lot of the Tolkien back lore to enhance the experience of the game. So if you play this game, or if you just want to be immersed in the sounds and the stories of Middle Earth, I can highly recommend you that you try out that podcast. You can find it in the iTunes store. Just look for Secrets of Middle Earth, or you can go to middleearth.sqpn.com. And that Middle Earth podcast also has a Twitter feed. So we've got Hobbit podcast, and we also have Middle Earth podcast now. So follow them if you want to stay updated on new shows, new episodes appearing. Anything else that we need to mention before we wrap up the show?
I'll just give a quick plug. Go search for Project Silmarillion on Google, and they have a website, www.project-silmarillion.com. There's a group of fans in Germany, I believe, working on a fan film inspired by the Silmarillion, and they have a really beautiful, awesome teaser trailer online. Maybe we can play it on the air next week.
Yes, we'll certainly do that. That sounds like a huge undertaking, bringing the Silmarillion to the screen and do it as fans. Wow. So this is, they want to do like video about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Wow. If you want to find it out, we'll try to include the links in our show notes, and you can find those also at thehobbit.sqpn.com. Any exciting things coming up on Middle Earth Network Radio?
Yeah, they're doing a release party for Mark Gunn, the Celt Father. He's got a new CD coming out called Don't Go Drinking with Hobbits, and they're going to do a release party on the radio on Saturday, October 22nd. So.
Nice. Don't Go Drinking with Hobbits. That sounds almost like a public service announcement?
Yes.
Don't drink with hobbits, or at least don't ride horses after drinking with hobbits.
Yes.
And don't fight orcs after drinking with hobbits.
Definitely not.
We can make a whole series based on that. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. And, well, until then, have fun in Middle Earth.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.